A passenger train by the name of the 400 Twin Cities made its last trip through Eau Claire on July 23, 1963. The train then made its way to St. Paul, terminating in Minneapolis. If local advocacy groups are successful, Western Wisconsin might see a people-moving train pass through the region again. Today on the West Side, we'll discuss the proposed passenger railway, which would connect Eau Claire to the Twin Cities, and ponder the impact the train would make on commerce in our communities. Good morning, I'm Dean Kallenbach, and this is the West Side. Our guests today are Scott Rogers. Scott Rogers is chair of the West Central Wisconsin Rail Coalition. He is also governmental affairs and workforce director for the Eau Claire Area Chamber of Commerce. Scott Rogers, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dean. Thanks for having us.
Mark Quam is president of the Chippewa Valley Transit Alliance and a representative for Wisconsin in a nationwide organization called Rail Passengers Association. He is also an officer of the West Central Wisconsin Rail Coalition. Mark Quam, good to have you.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
And on the phone, we have Jim Costin. He's the executive chair and co-founder of the Chicago-based Corridor Rail Development. That company develops, manages, and finances passenger rail systems throughout North America. Jim Costin, good to have you on the West Side. All right. Well, later we'll hear from Rob Krybek, the director of New Richmond's Chamber of Commerce. He's also a member of the West Central Wisconsin Rail Coalition. Are you excited about the possibility of a passenger railway? Would you ditch your car and commute to work via a train? Or maybe you think passenger rail is outdated as a form of travel. Call us with your questions, comments, and opinions at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615 to join the conversation. Scott Rogers, let's start with you. You chair the West Central Wisconsin Rail Coalition, which is celebrating its 20th anniversary in 2019. Who was in the coalition, and what has it been working toward in these 20 years?
Well, 20 years old sounds like we've either been very patient or not very effective, right? The coalition actually started about 20 years ago, back when the Thompson administration in Wisconsin was leading an effort of nine states in the Midwest to develop a Midwest rail system. And some of the leadership here in Eau Claire, people like Owen Ayers, the founder of Ayers Associates, Bill Leinenkugel from Leinenkugel Brewery, Ray Willoughby from Alliance Bank, saw that that system did not include West Central Wisconsin. They were looking at routes to Madison and Green Bay and the Twin Cities through La Crosse. And they started asking questions about that, that long term those leaders of our community had the foresight to say, we need to include passenger rail service. And so they put a committee together that was part of the Momentum Chippewa Valley Economic Development Organization and started investigating and looking at studies. And in fact, over the years, there have been a couple studies commissioned that do show that it's economically feasible to do this. So fast forward to today, we are now a 501c3 organization that basically is doing the research and the legwork to figure out how to make this sort of thing work.
So not surprisingly, according to the Bureau of Transportation Statistics, most Americans drive to work alone. When Americans go on vacation, 9 out of 10 take their personal vehicles. Except in metropolitan areas on the East Coast, railways fall behind air and bus travel as far as popularity goes. So, Mark Quam, in this climate, we've built this independence while traveling. Where is there room for this resurgence of rail travel that you folks are anticipating?
Well, I think one of the main subjects to address is, you know, people want transportation options. And obviously, we're a very car-based society here in the United States. And, you know, cars are great. They have a place. But I think as population grows and even rural areas grow somewhat, I think people really want options to get from point A to B other than always having to drive. And I think what's really critical is that we figure out a way to give people options. Obviously, you know, a lot of people that own cars probably will not ride a train. There's always some that don't. But I think giving people transportation options is really critical. I think one of the problems we have here in the United States, we assume everybody's going to drive. And I think for years, you know, we've had a focus on expanding the highways, and, you know, obviously they serve a need. Mm-hmm. But I think we're really at a junction point where you can't expand highways indefinitely and expect the same results. And I think really it's about giving people flexibility, mobility.
According to some four-year-old statistics I found, and their accuracy I'm not entirely sure about nowadays, but back in 2015, there were 85 metropolitan areas larger than the Eau Claire metropolitan area in the country that also lacked intercity rail service. Jim Costin, as you've observed communities around the country hoping to get a passenger rail corridor, is Eau Claire big enough to support passenger rail?
Well, Eau Claire is definitely big enough. The route is in place to accommodate this, the historic route over the former Northwestern, now Union Pacific. And as you suggested earlier, Dean, in 20 years, the grassroots support for this in the communities and the interrelated communities along the route have created a great deal of awareness in these communities. That's a very, very important attribute to starting up a successful rail corridor as well.
Scott Rogers, why is the time right for this now?
Well, you might say that it's a positive, perfect storm, that a lot of things are coming together. Jim mentioned the Union Pacific is invested in the track, and we have a rail line that's active and in very good shape that could be used. We have the actually ascendance of Eau Claire as a growing community. We're one of the two cities in the state that has had an increase in its workforce age population in the last 10 years, and we have a lot of good things going on here. We have a tremendous amount of commerce between here and the Twin Cities. And if we're going to continue to see that kind of growth, we have some economic reasons to bring it to come together. And just as we talk about this and bring the subject in front of people, we get a lot of very positive feedback from people who say they use it and have specific ways they would use it if it was available to them.
We hear the term high-speed rail. What's the definition of that term that we hear so often, Jim Costin? Is this proposal considered high-speed?
No, this is going to be considered a standard speed rail operation. That means that the track will be brought, and the signaling and the train stoppage mechanisms will be brought so that the train can reach a top speed of 79 miles an hour between Eau Claire and St. Paul Union Depot. Higher speed trains in this country, we've got sort of mid-level higher speed rail. For example, in Illinois, they're going to be getting to speeds of 110 miles an hour. In Michigan, they're doing the same thing. The more true high-speed rail in this country, anyway, is relegated to the Northeast Corridor, where trains can't operate 125 to 150 miles an hour in certain areas.
Mark Quam, the existing proposal for the Eau Claire-St. Paul Railway would be funded through what's being called a public-private partnership. Can you describe this model? Give us some understanding of how this will work financially.
Well, you know, basically with the rail project here, you know, obviously, you know, we need private investment, but we also need some form of public investment as well. And I think really to make passenger rail successful today, I think, you know, with a lot of some individuals that are anti-rail or some of our elected officials that maybe aren't as supportive of rail, I think this really gives us more of a unique opportunity to combine private investment along with public investment. I think one thing that probably should be pointed out, there really are no such thing as what we call public transportation that doesn't require some form or some small amount of subsidy. I mean, Europe, you know, subsidizes passenger trains. I think one thing that sometimes people don't realize, when you buy an airline ticket, your cost you're paying for an airline ticket isn't totally covered by what you're paying. I mean, all forms of transportation do require some subsidies. Our hope is, you know, with a private-public investment, the proportion, you know, that we would invest, you know, hopefully it's a smaller amount versus if it was going to be entirely picked up. Maybe Scott might want to add some comments on that.
Yeah, and it kind of goes to why we have Jim Costin on the phone and why we're working with an organization like that. If you look at how transportation has been funded over the last few years or how we structured it, and it's one of the reasons why we haven't seen growth in passenger rail service, but we've seen growth in other modes, and that is we do it sort of backwards. In every other mode, like airports, highways, we have a public infrastructure that the public pays for, primarily through capital, and most people don't realize it because they feel like their gas taxes are paying for the highways, but the percentage of the highway costs paid for out of gas taxes and other direct fees has slid to about 50%. So about half of the cost of highways are coming out of other tax sources like property taxes, general funds, that sort of thing. So basically, anytime you want to compete with that, you're competing against it's like going to a buffet and only having to pay for half of it. With rail, we're running on a private right-of-way with a public entity, and therefore you have an operating subsidy. However, we have seen some private investments start to happen in this country. In Florida, there's a Virgin, which runs airlines, et cetera, has decided to invest in a new service there between Orlando and Miami. A big part of what they're doing is that they're developing the real estate around the stations, plus it's a travel market that they think they can serve. And they're doing it with trains that are fast enough to be competitive or faster than driving. And so what we think we can do is by working directly with the railroad, by bringing in a private partner, instead of being a semi-government agency, that we can squeeze costs out of the system, and then by having a private organization that's market-driven, that they can work hard to improve customer service and improve revenues. And we think that's enough, that there may need to be some support on the capital side as we get it going. But there's some innovative ways to do that. And when we started looking at how that might be done and applying models from other places, that's when Corridor Capital came to our attention. They've been working with us now for a couple of years to see how we could structure something like that.
So, Scott Rogers, what private partners are on board and how many do you need?
The private partner so far is Corridor Rail Development, and the vision that they have presented to us is that, and what they say is that they can provide equipment, they can help put the financing together, be an investor in it, and help manage the service and get the operator together, which the railroad also prefers. We've been working with the railroad on some innovative ways to look at how to make sure the track is in shape. And then we need to look at how we're going to do the station sites. There may be some other non-traditional revenues besides fares, such as when you – we're talking about – we haven't really mentioned this before, but we're talking about having at least four trains a day between here and the Twin Cities as a starting point, which makes it convenient enough and also creates a lot of activity around the train stations, which creates investment potential. And there are some new concepts to capture the economic activity and growth and value around train stations that help support the service itself. So those are some of the components we're putting together. And Jim may want to comment on that, too.
Yeah, Jim, Jim Costin, I, you know, your company deals with this sort of activity all around the company, all around the country. You obviously saw an opportunity here that for a resurgence in this sort of city-to-city rail.
Yes, we saw that when we first started meeting with Scott and the leadership there, we saw that they had done a great deal of work. They already established a relationship with the Union Pacific Railroad, that they had made projections on what four trains a day would carry, that they could project that with the right costs taken care of at the front end, the right efficiencies in operating and the finances involving that, that we can aim to bring it to a break-even or better operation. One of the things you mentioned, just to jump in, is, you know, there's an old saying, old and it is 15 or 20 years old, in this business, which is the resurgence of state and regional rail corridors. The two most important things are frequency and reliability. It isn't how fast the train necessarily goes. It isn't necessarily how fast the train gets from one endpoint to another endpoint. It is that you run enough trains so that the people can pick their schedules as opposed to the schedules picking the people, and so that it can be depended upon to get you on time or within a couple of minutes on time to your destination.
Our topic today is a proposed passenger train linking Eau Claire and St. Paul with stops in Menominee, Baldwin, and Hudson. Joining us so far have been Jim Costin of the Chicago-based company Corridor Rail Development, as well as Mark Quam and Scott Rogers of the West Central Wisconsin Rail Coalition. Next up, we'll hear from the director of the New Richmond Chamber of Commerce, Rob Krybeck, who talks about the impact such a train would have in St. Croix County. Where is your mind on all this? Is this a service you would use? Does it turn Menominee and Eau Claire into bedroom communities of the Twin Cities? Join the conversation at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and you're tuned to the West Side on the Ideas Network. Now, we've talked a lot about the impacts of such a line on Eau Claire and Menominee, but what about the effect this would have on the border county of St. Croix? The West Side producer Clara Neipert spoke late last week with Rob Krybeck, the director of the New Richmond Chamber of Commerce, and she asked him about the impact of a passenger rail connection on his community.
Well, I think it would be another shot in the arm to what's already one of the fastest regions in the state of Wisconsin. So I think there's a lot of interest here. I sit on the St. Croix County EDC. I'm the vice president. We're inviting in a speaker sometime this summer to talk about all the potential, both in tourism, in commuting, in workforce, and recognizing really that millennials are a lot more open to this, I think, than maybe their parents or grandparents.
There's discussion surrounding how the railway will bring commuters into the Twin Cities, but do you think there's a danger that it would make it easier for local shoppers to spend their money in Minneapolis or St. Paul rather than in communities like New Richmond?
Okay, well, I mean, that's always a possibility. I guess we wouldn't know until it actually happened, and we could certainly deal with it if it was a big issue, but New Richmond had the third most new housing starts in the state of Wisconsin. So the Stillwater Bridge has opened up a lot of residential development, commercial development. So under that scenario, we just, with a new bridge as a transportation alternative, we've seen a net plus here in western Wisconsin.
So with the influx of people coming to live in your community, do you think there's a possibility to make communities like yours into what's known as bedroom communities? And if so, is that a bad thing?
I think you could probably make the case on some border communities that they're bedroom communities, but New Richmond is about 12 miles inside the state of Wisconsin, and it's got a small-town feel to it. It doesn't have a bedroom community feel to it. Yes, we do have a lot of commuters, but I think overall the possibility of rail service would be very appealing and probably accelerate the growth we're already seeing.
St. Croix Valley residents can often feel isolated from Wisconsin because of the strong influence of the Twin Cities across the river. Do you think that a train that connects western Wisconsin with Madison and Milwaukee via Tomah somehow reduced some of that isolation?
Oh, absolutely. I think the opportunity to connect more so with Eau Claire, with Madison, Milwaukee, holds as much opportunity as connecting with the Twin Cities. So I see tremendous opportunity for other parts of Wisconsin to benefit, because people here desperately want to feel like they're in Wisconsin, they're in Wisconsin, but a lot of times all they get is Minnesota news. So any connection to other parts of the state, I think, would be a definite bonus for this region. But you're absolutely right. People do feel isolated here, feel part of Minnesota, and I think a high-speed rail system would tether us more closely to Eau Claire, Chippewa Falls, Menominee, and further south and east. One of the more interesting components of high-speed rail is a labor shortage, and the fact that we've got manufacturers in St. Croix County desperate for workers, and they would see potentially high-speed rail as a way to compete and lure a workforce that's currently in the Twin Cities making a convenient drive across the river to Wisconsin here. So I think from a workforce economic development, in addition to tourism and just quality of life, I think high-speed rail has tremendous opportunity, and there's a lot of growing interest I've sensed in the last couple of years about it.
That's Rob Krybeck. He's president of the New Richmond Chamber of Commerce. Gives us a St. Croix County perspective on this proposed passenger rail corridor. Clara brought up the point in one of her questions to Rob Krybeck. I know that one of the things West Central Wisconsin Rail Coalition has been working on is not only that route to the Twin Cities, but can we connect with Amtrak down in Camp Douglas to get us connected to Madison, Milwaukee, Chicago. Where does that sit, without getting into deep detail, Scott Rogers, where does that aspect of this conversation sit right now?
Well, we really see this as...
Go ahead.
Well, we really see this as phase one, that we start with this service, but that it would lead to others. So, for instance, just because of some technical reasons, we wouldn't be able to go to Minneapolis right away. We'd extend it there. But the long-term vision is to have this be stops on a through route from Chicago, Milwaukee to the Twin Cities. Right now, that route goes through La Crosse. They're looking at additional service, which we support. But long term, when you have a true high-speed corridor, which Chicago to the Twin Cities actually is very high on the list of potential corridors in this country to come after the Northeast Corridor, the routes through Eau Claire and West Central Wisconsin are more practical because of the geography. You're not dealing with having to hug along the Mississippi River and all the environmental issues that brings with us. So we could end up seeing some additional service on the current route through La Crosse. But when you get to the farther future, when you have true high speed through here, it would be logical for it to go through Eau Claire, Menominee, Hudson, and those communities.
You mentioned the termination would be in St. Paul. And with everything going on in downtown Minneapolis and their rail that connects with the airport and the Mall of America, Jim Costin, wouldn't it be worth waiting till we could arrange an Eau Claire to Minneapolis route as a stronger option?
Not necessarily. The options for Minneapolis, are varied. When we first came across this opportunity with the project with the Central Pulse over 2 years ago, they identified downtown St. Paul as a destination for a predominant number of passengers embarking at Eau Claire and down the line. So no, we believe that starting the service and utilizing St. Paul Union Station, if we can do that, is the way to start. Adding an opportunity to make a second stop at Twin Cities along the way that will be well worth it, but it's not worth delaying the start.
You can join our conversation about passenger rail and the link between Eau Claire and St. Paul, which would include stations in Baldwin, Menominee, and Hudson. If you'd like to join that conversation, dial us now at 800-228-5615. Let's go to the phones. Got a couple callers on the line. Vern is on the line from Boyd. Thanks for waiting, Vern. You're on the west side.
Oh, good morning. I used to ride the railroad back in the 40s, 50s, all the way to Racine. But here's the thing with the train. I could turn the radio down. The train has a tremendous amount of mass. So it takes a lot to start it and a lot to stop it. So to make the train, passenger train, more efficient, like I say, you take what's called a wound rotor motor, and then you'd have a car with a lithium-ion battery in, big ones, and then these motors generate. They work as a motor generator. They have high traction. Then when you come downhill, you recover your energy. When you come to a stop, you recover your energy. When you take off, you have electrical assisted takeoff, so you might recover 85% of the energy you would normally expend. Now, if you want to, say, haul passengers, you're going to have to take some kind of high value cargo with you, a couple of trains or a couple of cargo trains with you. And one way to, they used to have what they call rail sidings, they'd back up to take a car off. But if you think about it, use a round table and just put the park train over that, turn it. Then take the train or the car off, then hook them back up, and you don't have all this extra time waiting. But it used to go back all the way to Chicago. I rode that way. It was a nice ride, but like I said, they're very heavy, and you've got to recover the energy. And I don't even know if we have the capacity to build the rails or the cars or the engines in the United States anymore.
Well, let's find out. Thank you, Vern. Jim Costin, it seems like a good good thing to direct to you. And Vern brought up a couple things. Let's take one at a time. He talked about technology, and it's been, like I say, over 50 years since we had a train run between Eau Claire and the Twin Cities. Are there changes in technology that make that more possible, more efficient?
Yes, and in fact, we've been involved with them because we're going to be supplying locomotives as well, just like the cars we're going to. They're going to be fully rebuilt as new, but we are the locomotive folks that we're working with are considering the use of alternative fuels as well as batteries to be carried aboard and to take advantage of regenerative braking to draw that power that you get from braking the train and be able to use it when you accelerate again. There's a host of opportunities. There's the use of natural gas. There's all kinds of things that are being explored by the Class 1 railroads as well as passenger trains. It will be some time in coming, but between that and the diesel-electric locomotives being a lot cleaner and the trains that we are going to provide are going to comply with what they call the Tier 4 of environmentally friendly locomotives so that they are emitting virtually zero particulate matter, making them almost non-polluting vehicles. The North Carolina Department of Transportation has experimented with them, has a prototype, successfully ran it for over a year, same company we're working with, and they're going to expand the program. So there's a lot going on in that area.
Mark Quam, one of the organizations that you represent, the Chippewa Valley Transit Alliance, has eco-friendliness as part of its mission. Is that a reason that you're involved with the coalition?
Well, that's only one of many reasons. I've long been a rail advocate since I was young. I loved riding trains. And yes, there's a nostalgia part about riding trains. But really, I think the bigger picture is, and especially with the Chippewa Valley Transit Alliance based here in Eau Claire, it's really about creating sustainable long-term forms of public transportation. And I think, you know, getting a few more people out of their cars or giving people some choices once in a while to not always have to get in the car. I think that's really a driving force in, you know, why we promote sustainability and leaving less of a carbon footprint as well.
Scott Rogers, Vern brought up the possibility of having cargo as well as passengers. Is that part of the plan?
At this point, it isn't. Obviously, one of the things about having private operator and somebody who's market-driven is you look at every possibility for revenue, so it wouldn't be ruled out. You know, you're looking at a service where there is, we think, high demand for travel between those cities, that you can compete with the automobile, that you'll get the ridership. And if you would compare a train with 150 or 200 people on board with all of those people driving automobiles, the efficiency just speaks for itself.
Let's take another call. We'll join Cliff. And Cliff is in Minneapolis. Cliff, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I was wondering if we aren't using a 19th century technology to solve a 21st century problem with smart vehicle technology coming along and being developed. Isn't there other ways to link vehicles together over roadways to have them travel at high speeds very safely, have them actually pick you up at your home and take you to your destination without having to drive to a train station, find parking, which is often a problem, and then getting off on the other side and being in a train station, which might be a distance from your final destination. So somehow isn't smart technology the way to move forward with mass transit?
Thank you, Cliff. Scott Rogers, let's start with you on that. Yes, train technology has improved, and other transportation technologies have as well. Do those compete with your proposal?
I don't think so, and people don't really know what those are going to lead to yet because they're actually not here yet. So it's kind of like the Jim's example of why aren't we going to Minneapolis right away. There would be ways to get to Minneapolis, the light rail, maybe a dedicated bus connection. But you don't wait for something you can use now for something that might come in the future. Now, some of the I've heard presentations at conferences I've been to, for instance, from the research director from Lyft, and they believe that with autonomous vehicles and so forth, that you're going to see an increase in things like intercity rail, where the vehicle would take you to the train station, for instance. But yeah. The idea of fleeting the vehicles on highways, that, you know, that technology isn't here and is a long ways away. We're talking about a technology we could implement. You know, we could be running in a couple of years and be using it and taking advantage of it, and it wouldn't preclude doing that in the future.
Mark Quam, I know that as I think about how this might practically work out, let's say you dropped off in Baldwin. Baldwin doesn't have a robust public transportation system. Let's say you get dropped off in Baldwin, but your final destination is New Richmond. Is there any conversation talking about the transportation that goes from the stations to get people to communities of population like a New Richmond, like a Rice Lake, or even rural areas beyond what they already serve?
Well, I think really what we're looking at with the rail project, once we get passenger rail up and running, especially like River Falls, is to have a connecting bus service or a connecting shuttle service to meet the train, you know, at scheduled times. And I think that really could be replicated at other station stops. I think, you know, working with other shuttle van services or taxi cab services, I think it's all feasible. And I know a lot of times there's a big deterrent for taking the train. Well, how do I get that last leg or that last mile? And I think with the availability of cabs, shuttles, and maybe coordinated transportation, that, you know, it, it really can be overcome. I really don't see that as an obstacle, I guess.
Jim Costin, your company, Corridor Rail Development, is dealing with many of these sorts of issues all around the country. How are they being solved?
Well, the recurring themes here are the ability to be able to create the optimal situation is a single seat service where a passenger gets on a conveyance, be it a passenger train, bus, car, whatever, and is able to travel to their ultimate destination. The connectivity is the next best step in terms of, just like at St. Paul, where you have the light rail right at St. Paul Union Depot, et cetera, at Eau Claire, where we'll have the buses queue up at the new train station, et cetera. You're always trying to figure out a way to take the person from where they want to go to where they want to end up and not leave them somewhere. Like I say, the single-seat service, when you can do it, like airport shuttles, et cetera, very important there. Here, when you're traveling to a city, so long as you have in place connecting transit buses, light rail, et cetera, that gives sufficient opportunities, and then Uber and Lyft give you other options as well.
That's Jim Costin of Corridor Rail Development. Scott Rogers and Mark Quam of the West Central Wisconsin Rail Coalition also stay with us. We'd like to hear from you, though. How do you see the development of a rail connection affecting West Central Wisconsin communities, particularly the ones that would have stations, Hudson, Baldwin, Menominee, and Eau Claire? Call in at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and we're talking passenger rail today on the West Side on the Ideas Network. We're back on the West Side, where we're talking about passenger rail service and a proposal that would link Eau Claire and St. Paul with passenger rail service. And Mark Quam, the proposed train route would connect Eau Claire and St. Paul, and along the way there would be stations in Menominee, Baldwin, and Hudson. The train would run around four trips per day, as Scott mentioned earlier. How long would it take to get from Eau Claire to St. Paul, and I assume back? And what was the decision-making process for selecting those particular communities for stations?
Well, basically with that route, it would have to be competitive with drive time, so you'd basically be looking at about 90 minutes, which is competitive with driving. One of the problems you always run into, if the train is going to get delayed or if it's going to go longer than that, obviously that makes it less of a incentive to take the train. But, as far as the station stops, and Scott can probably comment on this too, but my understanding was that with the station stops, it's based on, where the most population is. Hudson, obviously, a fairly good-sized city, and Baldwin as well, and Menominee. Obviously, train would like to probably stop at a lot more places, but given the time constraints, you have to really minimize the number of stops. Amtrak currently does that with a lot of other cities along their route to minimize the travel time.
Have you thought about locations? I would think so, Scott Rogers, as far as where these stations might be, obviously on the train tracks, but where in the communities? I'm thinking particularly Eau Claire, there would be a few choices.
Yeah, and that would be one of the things you'd address as you get a little deeper into making decisions, and you would definitely work with each of the communities. You'd also want to look at things like, what is the development potential around the station? What is the accessibility? In some communities, like Hudson, it might be starting something new on the east side of town. In Eau Claire, it might be more logical in the Banbury Place area, where there's still some room to develop, but you're also close to all the amenities and conveniences of downtown. And I know Jim has been out and has looked at some of the sites, too, as we've looked at this line, and he may have some comments on that, too.
Go ahead, Jim. Are you there, Jim Costin? Go ahead.
Yeah, and we have seen the natural line. Of course, all the stations have been removed since the service was discontinued in the mid-60s. But there are natural places, both where stations were sited before and other places. We're fortunate that train runs right through the middle of town, which is where you want your station to be. So it's all a question of, to the extent you're going to have any transit or any other vehicles meeting trains at that particular community, to make sure the station is designed and accessible for that as well.
We have a question from a person in Eau Claire who asks, or says, many people in the corridor attend concerts at the Ordway. will there be a late evening service for returning home? And again, lots of things happening in the Twin Cities, baseball games, basketball games, that sort of thing, and, of course, concert events and plays, opera, that sort of thing. Would there be an accommodation for that as far as the schedule is concerned?
Well, the schedule hasn't been finalized yet, and certainly that kind of thing would be considered and desirable. In fact, one of the reasons we've had organizations like Rail Credit Union support what we're doing because they see it as a way to attract people to live in our community if there's more accessibility. And one of those things is you could get to the Twin Cities for events and business and other things. And it might even be that it would run on weekend nights or something like that. What a lot of people may not realize is that Wisconsin supports a corridor between Milwaukee and Chicago called the Hiawatha. And that has 7 trains a day, and there's one night a week they have a late night train coming out of Chicago because they know people are going to be there later. I think the same thing between Boston, Massachusetts, and Portland, Maine, which is a corridor not like unlike this one, which has 5 trains a day, they have a late night train. So it'd certainly be something that would be looked at. And with a private operator who's trying to maximize revenues, if they think their ridership's there, we would probably try to have a departure like that.
Speaking of revenue, has there been discussion of what a ticket should cost, could cost, Mark Quam?
My understanding with the ticket costs about $32, Scott, I believe, somewhere in that range.
Just kind of a general, obviously it's not running yet.
Right.
Yeah. But you look at the market, you look what they charge in other corridors. Yeah. The airport shuttle is $43. People are using that. So and it would probably vary. You'd probably have group tickets. You'd have multi-ride tickets. You might have a premium class where people pay a little extra for a nicer experience.
And would there be a consideration for like subsidized tickets for students or seniors?
That certainly could be an option.
That's further down the road, apparently.
Potentially. Yeah. You know, if I could just put a little spin on, you know, the callers are with the question about going to the Ordway.
Right.
Well, I think, you know, with our redevelopment downtown with the Pablo Center and the Confluence Center, I think, you know, we're looking at bringing more Twin Cities people to come over to Eau Claire for a weekend or some type of an outing downtown with the performing arts and whatnot. And I think that really adds an incentive to get the rail going because obviously it will attract people from the Twin Cities to come here for things too.
Yeah, Mark's exactly right. If you think about bringing people from the Twin Cities for events here, we have a tremendous bike trail system within the city of Eau Claire connecting to Menominee and so forth. So there are a lot of reasons for people to come to West Central Wisconsin. So, you know, anytime you talk about is it going to have people go to the Twin Cities, the trains are going to run in both directions. And anytime you create additional opportunities for commerce, you're going to benefit in both ways, just like it's the same way with the highways.
Similar city-to-city passenger railways appear across the Midwest. You've mentioned Amtrak's Hiawatha service, which connects Chicago to Milwaukee. It serviced more than 800,000 riders last year. But some railways in the Midwest are facing challenges. Amtrak owns the Hoosier State Train connecting Indianapolis to Chicago. They'll be suspended July 1st due to lack of state funding there. What are differences between these railways and the one between Eau Claire and St. Paul? And Jim Costin, how will this railway compare to lines that are Amtrak run?
Well, first of all, to compare to the Hoosier State Line, which operates over the CSX railroad primarily between Chicago and Indianapolis, that line is fraught with issues. It was not originally an intact passenger train line. Some of the lines that were originally in use from Chicago to Indianapolis and Cincinnati back at the time when Amtrak was established in 71, have since been taken up. So they had to cobble together over three or four decades, different routes to get between Chicago and Indianapolis. And the problem is it takes almost 5 hours to get from Chicago to Indianapolis, and it really ought to take, you know, 3 hours and a little change. Makes it very daunting. There was some traffic from Lafayette, but still, it was a very difficult corridor to maintain. It was only operating 4 days a week because the long-distance trains from Washington, the Cardinal, goes through Cincy and Indianapolis to get to Chicago as well. The state of Indiana just felt that they couldn't financially support $3-4 million a year to operate the train 4 days a week when it was, you know, performing so poorly. It's unfortunate. There should be multi-frequency service between Chicago and Indianapolis, but that's going to have to wait until there is better infrastructure to be able to allow those trains to operate. Over here, the track's in great shape. It was built for passenger trains. It was built as a double-track railroad, so parts of the second track can be put back in as needed, or passing tracks, et cetera. The Union Pacific here can create a very efficient operation for these four daily round trips between Eau Claire and St. Paul.
We haven't spent a lot of time talking about the track, and you mentioned Union Pacific owns it. Where do those negotiations stand, and you know, how does one coexist with cargo rail from Union Pacific? Scott Rogers, why don't you start with that?
Sure, and Jim might want to jump in because he was involved in the last meeting we had with Union Pacific. But they have been open to doing this. They have capacity. You know, they're a business, and they look at what makes sense for them. They have some capacity. They've invested in it. They've actually put in the signal system that's required for passenger service. They didn't put it in for passenger service. And so they're looking at how they utilize their assets, and they've been open to looking at ways that passenger service and freight service can coexist and make them a more a successful business as well. And Jim, you might want to relate. You actually met with them in Omaha recently.
Yeah, we're very fortunate to be dealing with Union Pacific Railroad. Some railroads have strong issues with regard to the operation of passenger trains over their routes. They will limit the carriers, et cetera. The Union Pacific has been very open. They were enthusiastic about our bringing in a private carrier, and there's a half a dozen of them or so in this country who are certified carriers who operate commuter and other trains in this country and can operate the train here over the Union Pacific. In addition, the Union Pacific has been very forthcoming and very open about the pricing for this, the work that needs to be done to make sure that the trains can get over the railroad on time, four times a day round trip. That's why they've asked the coalition to hire a railroad consultancy that they work with on a regular basis to do what they call a route study over the route and determine what work needs to be done, what the Union Pacific should be charging for what they call the slots, if you will, the four. Eight trains round trip means you've got eight slots on the railroad you're using that day. And they're looking at putting together something that's pretty new, which is the pricing of the slots on a market basis rather than basically asking the coalition to rebuild the whole railroad between Eau Claire and St. Paul, which would be a costly and time-consuming requirement. In this case, they're looking to put the train on. We can put together a first five-year operating contract and get running. They've got excess capacity on this railroad line right now, and it's a win-win for both the region and for the Union Pacific.
Jim Costin, is there a different standard as far as track quality between passenger rail and cargo?
Well, what tracks are rated, they're rated Class 1, Class 2, Class 3, all the way up to Class 6, and both of the passenger and freight distinctions have different speeds in those railroads. For example, where we're going to be operating passenger trains, we'll be able to operate as fast as 79, freight trains as fast as 60 or 70.
What do we anticipate the economic impact is going to be for the communities along this line? Obviously, that's some of the work that the coalition has been doing as it's been exploring this. Scott Rogers, can you share, a guess as to where that would play out?
Well, I think and this is really one of the primary drivers as to why a lot of businesses and our organizations in the area are interested in this, because it gives us a competitive advantage, or at least doesn't allow us to fall behind, because there are a lot of medium-sized cities with universities around the Midwest that do have passenger rail service, and so it's important to have it. It's an alternative we can have. It ties us closer to the Twin Cities and eventually Milwaukee and Chicago, and makes it us more accessible. And then it can foster some compact development around the rail station, so that some of the things we've been already seeing in Eau Claire can be happening either in new developments in places like Baldwin, New Richmond, Hudson, and Menominee. And so the kind of growth that you get when you have a positive economic activity like that is the kind of things that we can take advantage of. For instance, the sites around the train stations. You could see apartments. You could see housing going in there. You could see businesses wanting to locate where they're convenient. And then, of course, all the other services like restaurants and retail and so forth.
It occurs to me this feels a little like it parallels the development of the Pablo Center at the Confluence in my mind, because it was a need that had been felt for many decades in the community, and yet it was when this public-private partnership kind of didn't fall into place. It was a lot of hard work by a lot of people. But when that finally became a reality, and it seems like the private part of it was the key, that something could move forward. Mark Quam, is that your sense as well? Is this something whose time has come, or are there still a lot of pieces that have to fall into place before this becomes reality?
You know, I think with private development and public development, really, I think you really need that stimulus. And I think if people want a livable community and you want people to invest in the community, you have to make things accessible and mobile. And I think, you know, when you look at what is done in Europe with their transportation systems, I think, you know, we still have a long ways to go here. But I think, you know, hopefully as population centers grow, that we want to give people choices, give people flexibility. And really, it's about having that access, having that ability to go where you want to go, when you want to go.
So, Jim Costin, what barriers remain for this to become a reality and for us to be taking part in passenger rail service here in western Wisconsin?
Well, the first barrier or threshold we want to cross is to engage the railroad consultancy that the coalition is going to be doing. It'll take a few months for that route analysis, that route study to be done. That will give us first indication of what work needs to be done over the railroad. Can the railroad put the trains over the route within a 90-minute timetable? What kind of pricing is going to be involved with regard to the use of the slots, et cetera? I think that's our first big issue to cross. The rest there's always issues of money. There's always, issues of logistics, but that would seem to be the big one. Once we've got that, everything else, we, follow basic procedures on everything else in terms of with regard to making the ultimate arrangement with the Union Pacific with the underlying contract, the selection, retention of a private train operator, and then constructing the trains and bringing them up here and having them maintained here.
Scott Rogers, will there be opportunities for the public to have more input into this conversation?
Definitely, and I think you can look for that in the near future. A lot of what we've been doing the last few months has been working with Jim's firm, with the railroad and others, to sort of start putting all of these pieces together, and we have a few more I's to dot and T's to cross before we can be very public about what we're doing and actually start engaging people and getting them involved. And it kind of answered the question you asked about, has its time come, and is there a lot of pieces still to come together? And the answer is yes to both. And just like the Confluence Project, you know, that was a need. It was something that took some real innovation to do, but anytime you innovate, then sometimes things are harder to pull together, but the long-term result is better. And we're kind of in the same position. We're taking a more non-traditional approach to getting this service started, but we think that'll make it more successful and make it last for the long term that way.
That's the voice of Scott Rogers. He's chair of the West Central Wisconsin Rail Coalition, also governmental affairs and workforce director for the Eau Claire Area Chamber of Commerce. We were also joined by Mark Quam, the president of the Chippewa Valley Transit Alliance, a representative for Wisconsin in a nationwide organization called Rail Passengers Association, and he also is a member of the West Central Wisconsin Rail Coalition. And Jim Costin was also on the line. He's executive chair of Corridor Rail Development, which has been very involved in the work that's being done on this line, passenger rail line between Eau Claire and the Twin Cities. Rob Krabick also joined us earlier. He's director of New Richmond's Chamber of Commerce and also a member of the West Central Wisconsin Rail Coalition. Clara Neipert and Catherine Thomas produced today's show. Thanks to Ali Schultze and Kate Spranger for publicity. Next week, we take the pulse of agriculture in West Central Wisconsin, exploring the impact of low milk prices on our dairy industry, checking in on the impact of new tariffs on local farmers, and looking into other driving forces in agriculture and agribusiness in this state. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dean Kallenbach. This is The West Side.